From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of June 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll hear all about the teacher shortage in Illinois across many urban and rural areas of the Midwest, in fact, and what Illinois has done in the legislation and how that's impacted one rural school district in deep southern Illinois, that from the Illinois Newsroom Collaborative. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Wrist Pulse in Chicago, and it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Monday afternoon, let's turn our attention to what happened at the CME Group in Chicago. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Hey, first things first, before we get started, I'm looking forward to seeing you in person on Friday in Assumption for the Assumption Fest breakfast. This is, I don't know what year it is for them, not too many years in, but our first year, and you will be there along with Ellen Dearden and Kim Holzapfel, and Dan Zwicker will be along. We'll be up on stage at 8:30 a.m. That Assumption Fest breakfast is free. It starts at 7 a.m., wraps up at 9 o'clock, as long as, well, I could keep all of you in line, but we'll go as far as we can, I suppose. And we'll make sure people get a chance to ask some questions, too. I'll bet there'll be a lot of them, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to having you there and to being there myself. How about you?
Yeah, it's always great to get out and visit with listeners and other people that attend the meeting, but having the Waco flash there is going to be quite a thing itself. I have a lot of fun being on panel with Dan.
Yeah, you know, he started his career in that Shelby Christian County area. For those who are looking to go, it's Assumption's just not that big. However, we'll be in a tent across from the John Deere dealer across from Sloan's there, so that should be pretty easy to find. We'll have lots to talk about. Was it the president's tweet last night? I haven't looked, which said, look, if nations think they can take the United States on in trade, we're going to hit them back with not only an equal amount, but a larger amount. He used reciprocity. But was that what happened in the trade today and why it was lower? Or are there other factors in play as well?
Well, yeah, we feel that's a high percentage of it. And if you look at the Dow and some of these other markets, they're kind of reflecting that too, because he's hitting or mentioning the financial sector. Asia has quite a bit of financial interest here in the U.S., and when he starts talking about working with that kind of digs the whole thing just a little deeper here. And as of right now, there's just no real let-up. Hopefully there's some behind-the-scenes negotiations taking place, or will be some negotiations take place, because as of right now, we've not seen any give in export sales. We did see some bean sales, 186,000 tons of beans to unknown destination. Hopefully that's an Asia bounce at some point in time. But it's being a concern. It'll be a concern until we hit that midnight hour of July 5th. And kind of see where we go from there. But also, too, we're seeing somewhat favorable weather, even though there is some moisture stress starting to show up in some areas. This afternoon's crop conditions reports expected to be about unchanged, but probably the key is to tune into those areas that's been receiving too much rain, such as Minnesota, northern Iowa, and some spots here in throughout the Midwest. We're hearing reports that beans just don't like wet feet. We're starting to see a little bit more concern about the conditions of the bean crop. But that's more of a longer-term factor. Too much rain this time of year, not a real big headline item, per se. So with the Trump tweets, somewhat favorable weather, no big export news around, it kind of feels that we're in kind of a soft tone here. The overnight trade started out somewhat firm for the most part, particularly beans. We kind of made a new high for the move. Then we sort of faded and ended up closing lower, particularly below the previous day's low. Today's lows in the beans and corn, particular December corn and November beans, is about halfway back down to last week's low. So technically, we need to kind of find some support here near today's lows time.
And I want to come back to some of the trade issues. July 5th, as you know, midnight on July 5th going into July 6th is sort of the deadline day, and then the $200 billion will go into place as the deadline. That's the extra $200 billion that the Trump administration says it will put on Chinese goods. When you look forward, and you mentioned this on Commodity Week, the problem becomes at that point how quickly it can be resolved, and also logistics as it relates to ships and where they are and how they've been put into place. So July 6th, when you put it into context, looks more like September or maybe, I don't know, early October, I suppose, for logistics. And that becomes a real problem for moving global feedstocks and oil seeds around the world. Is that right?
Yeah, if you think, you know, as a producer trying to get the crop in the ground, you're on a time schedule here. You got to go boom, 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 get the crop in. And in the fall, you know, if weather cooperates, you got a little bit more time. But any type of business, you're in a time strain. And when you look at the global logistics on shipping particularly, it's quite obvious. The ships are in the northern hemisphere bringing our harvest to where it needs to be. Then during the spring and summer, they're in the southern hemisphere moving beans to Asia. You just can't really, you know, break that cycle, and you got to have those ships in the right position to, you know, for the most part, maximize your profit. Now, the crop is a little late due to the truck strike and so forth, so we can probably hold off a little bit until we get those last half of September, first half October beans shipped out of the southern hemisphere, and then they're going to be waiting in line to do something here in the northern hemisphere. So they've already got some beans on the books, but, you know, if this tariff takes place, we could see some cancellations because our beans need to be about 25% cheaper than the southern hemisphere. But that's going to be an interesting thing to watch here as we move into this fall.
We'll continue to talk about it. I'll continue to ask questions. Thanks for all the research and all the help that you give us each and every Monday. We'll talk with you again in about a week, and we'll see you Friday at Assumption Fest.
Looking forward to it. Take care. Thanks.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, just a few hours after President Trump tweeted that nations should expect greater than trade tariff reciprocity from the United States, a statement that ups the ante on the global trade issues, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has penned an op-ed for USA Today. In it, he says Donald Trump will protect American farmers from China's trade retaliation. Perdue's exact quote is, "Now President Donald Trump is standing up to China, which wrongly believes it can bully our farmers to get America to back away from defending our national interest. The president understands that our farmers feed, fuel, and clothe this nation and the world, and he will not allow U.S. agriculture to bear the brunt of China's retaliatory tactics." However, the secretary steers clear of saying just how the Trump administration plans to protect. Let's read that as compensate U.S. farmers. Two Fridays ago, the secretary was asked if Commodity Credit Corporation or CCC funds would be released. He did not answer the question. In today's op-ed, the secretary again deflected, writing, quote, "In the meantime, the president has instructed me to craft a strategy to support our farmers in the face of retaliatory tariffs. At the U.S. Department of Agriculture, we have tools at our disposal to support farmers faced with losses that might occur due to downturns in commodity markets. To this point, we have not unveiled our strategy, as it is not good practice to open our playbook while the opposing team is watching," unquote. He does go on to say if China does not soon, quote, "mend its ways, the administration will move quickly to fulfill a promise to support producers that have become a casualty of the dispute." It's not clear if the redress will be for the short-term losses, for instance, the more than $100 potential per soybean acre that had piled up in the last couple of weeks, or the potential longer-term loss of a market that has been building soybean demand for years. From trade, let's move to the Farm Bill. Fresh off a victory in the House, Farm Bill backers are now anxiously waiting to see how quickly the Senate can follow suit this week. The Senate plans to vote on a motion to invoke cloture tonight, a procedural step that paves the way for consideration of the Farm Bill on the floor. Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa is widely expected to put forth an amendment related to his signature farm policy crusade. That's tightening the rules governing subsidy payments given to farmers. Grassley is coming in hot from the last Farm Bill when his subsidy limit amendment passed the Senate, but ultimately was stripped down during conference. Senator John Thune, also a Republican but from South Dakota, has been working behind the scenes too with the Senate ag leaders to craft an amendment tweaking the Conservation Reserve Program. At the Farm Bill markup, Chairman Pat Roberts, a Republican from Kansas, and the ranking member, along with Debbie Stamenaw, a Democrat from Michigan, promised Thune that they'd put their heads together to incorporate some of his CRP proposals in a package they can all agree upon. Now, how will things wrap up? Well, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell limits amendments to move things along quickly. You can expect this show to wrap up soon. Of course, the Majority Leader would like to see his language legalizing hemp make it to the finish line sooner rather than later. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, up next, parts of Illinois are facing a teacher shortage. It's hitting large urban and small rural districts especially hard. Illinois lawmakers have passed legislation, of course, to address the issue, but as Illinois Newsroom's Lee Gaines reports, some educators say it's just not enough.
To find out what the teacher shortage looks like, I called the superintendent of one district in southern Illinois. Hey, Chuck, can you hear me now?
I can.
That's Chuck Blyer, soon to be the former superintendent of Pope County Community Unit School District No. 1. It's a rural district on the southeastern edge of Illinois. Blyer's about to post a job for a teacher in the district, and he's doubtful they'll be able to find someone.
It'll be very difficult. That's how bad the pool is right now.
More than 2,000 teaching, administrative, and support staff positions went unfilled at schools across Illinois during the prior school year, according to the State Board of Education. Stacy Teff sees the effects of that shortage. She teaches high school in Murfreesboro, another town in southern Illinois. Teff says the lack of teachers in classrooms robs kids of a quality education.
That's scary because this is our next generation. This is the future of the state, the country.
And the problem is not unique to Illinois. A national report from the nonprofit Learning Policy Institute shows the number of students studying to be teachers dropped 35% between 2009 and 2014. Illinois lawmakers passed legislation this spring to address the shortage, including making it easier for people to work as substitute teachers and provide reciprocity for teachers licensed outside of Illinois. Plus, a measure mandating minimum teacher salaries of $40,000 by 2022. I asked Blyer, the superintendent, if it's enough.
No, that's a Band-Aid.
So what will it take to fix the teacher shortage? Chris Rogge from the University of Illinois' Council on Teacher Education says we already know what to do.
Compensation, preparation, induction and mentoring, and teaching conditions. All of these things help attract people in to teaching, and they help retain people once they're there.
And most of that can be boiled down to resources. But none of the legislation passed this spring comes with any extra money for schools. I called Republican State Representative Tom Bennett. He co-sponsored legislation aimed at addressing the problem. He acknowledges it's not enough. So I put it to Bennett this way. How are we going to get out of this mess without increasing the resources that the state gives to these local districts? And is there a will to do that in the General Assembly?
You got some great questions. You really do. And I don't have a crystal ball.
But it's not just about money. It's also about respect, Blyer, the superintendent, says. He says educators feel less respected now than in previous decades.
We're blamed for everything that's wrong, and we're never giving any credit for anything that's right. It's hard to get people to want to go into a field where you're never really respected by the country itself.
A lack of resources combined with the lack of respect for teachers drives many people out of the classroom. And Teft, the Murfreesboro teacher, warns that the people most hurt by this shortage are the students.
It's always about the kids, and they deserve the best, and they deserve the best future they can have. And right now, I'm not sure they're getting that. Just because you do not have the best people going into the education field because it's not enticing at the moment.
Teft says people working in education and those who left it understand the risks of not addressing the shortage. It's getting everyone else to share their sense of urgency that's frustrating. I'm Lee Gaines, Illinois Newsroom.
Illinois Newsroom is a collaborative focused on expanding coverage of education, state politics, health, and the environment. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Let's check the cash grain markets now with Greg Johnson. He's of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. First off, Greg, what a rainfall we had last Friday. I finished up this program. Of course, I'm in the basement of Bumford Hall and drove home. And there's a sign for those who've been on I-72 between Bloomington and Champaign. They've probably seen it that says the origin of the Kaskaskia River. Now, for those who listen to us on the podcast over on the Mississippi River, they know there's a terminal there. So the Kaskaskia starts here, but it's big enough to have a grain terminal and barges by the time it gets over below St. Louis. And holy smokes, I finally found out that it really starts there because there was water flowing out of those fields. I've not once, and since, I don't know, the early 1990s, seen water. What a rainfall we had.
I haven't seen water in that at that particular point either, but you're right. That must be where the Kaskaskia starts, obviously, now.
Well, it is, and it's an important river because there's a terminal on it, but man. And that brings me to the cash grain market, I suppose. It's just having to react at this point to what's happens in Chicago. Did it follow suit and drop substantially today?
Basis levels were basically unchanged. The market just doesn't care. You would think normally with lower futures prices, as we've seen, that the basis would get better. But railroad performance has been so bad that a lot of the traders are almost afraid to go out and buy too much, knowing that they're not going to be able to get trains anyway. So they're buying kind of truck beans hand to mouth, and that's keeping a lid on basis levels improving. So we're hoping that railroad performance improves and we can start seeing basis levels improve, because normally we get either a better basis or a better futures, but right now we're not getting either one.
Well, what's tying the engines up? Do you know?
Well, you know, they say that there's other commodities that are more important. Some of the railroads have gone to a just-in-time mentality where they don't allocate a lot of excess capacity, whether that be locomotives or labor. And so for 9 months out of the year, they have enough labor, but when the demand picks up, they don't have enough demand or enough people to supply that demand. So they're just getting by kind of on a as-is basis, and we hope that improves as we go into the fall, because as big of an inconvenience as it is here in June, it's going to be an even bigger problem if it's still that way in September and October.
Any indication from the railroads that they'll be fixing the problem?
They're addressing it. Our trade organization, the National Grain and Feed Association, is addressing that issue. So the questions are being asked, and so it's not like they don't know about it. But hopefully we can get something worked out in the next couple of months.
Well, there's just good news all around. What are your bids for the What are your bids for the day?
Yeah, more good news there too. Cash corn is now $3.35. New corn $3.51. Cash beans $8.44, new beans $8.60, and new crop wheat is $4.82.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. When we come back, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Mark Russo will be here. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago. You can always hear him online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is now here. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago. Mark, it looks like we're going to be okay today, but man, the hot weather is coming back. Can you tell me about it across the Midwest?
Yeah, we're going to be seeing a ridging of high pressure build into the Midwest later on this week and over the upcoming weekend, and that will also prevail into next week, the Independence Day holiday week. In fact, as we look out through the first week to 10 days of July, here in the Midwest, it's shaping up to be the hottest start to July since 2012. Now, granted, 2012, major drought year, ongoing major drought, and that help to set the table there for early July with the amount of heat and especially the extensive nature of the heat that year. But specifically in the Midwest, with this ridge pattern building in for the early part of the month, yeah, it's shaping up to be a pretty hot start to July.
We know pollination is impacted with temperatures above 93 degrees. Will that be a problem?
From a daytime maximum temperatures, in fact, again, starting this weekend and through much of next week, highs will be climbing in daytime highs in the 90s across much of the Corn Belt. Not going to be a ton of 100 degree readings. And actually, one of the features here that's limiting that a little bit is due to the very high soil moisture content because of the active conditions of late. But While that will minimalize some of the afternoon high temperatures, that will also help aid in increasing the dew points, relative humidities, and ultimately the overnight minimum temperature. So we're going to be going through several days here where the overnight minimum temperatures will only be in the 70s, maybe even a few low 80s for overnight minimum temperatures. So that's going to be one of the other items here during this early July period of heat.
Can we expect widespread pop-up showers throughout the Midwest?
Well, this week is still on the active side here, and what we're going to be seeing before this ridge builds into the Midwest, we're going to be seeing some additional thunderstorm complexes developing over the heart of the belt, which actually some states like Missouri and even portions of eastern Kansas, southwestern part of the Corn Belt, could use that rain as they've been on the dry side. Now, as we go into the early part of July, there will be some pop-up activity, but the main rain activity, the bigger storm complexes, the higher precipitate totals, will be further up to the north in areas such as central northern Minnesota, Dakotas, and then down in the southeast. Midwest is kind of in a no man's land here, with the exception of, again, some isolated pop-up storms during that early July period.
Any problems to speak of in China or India, two northern hemisphere producers?
Yes. Certainly no weather issues at the present time across both of those areas. And really the main issue out there right now, especially going into July, is across Russia. The Corn Belt has been very dry and now is going to be seeing some significant heat starting out July.
And thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Bris Pulse from Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org.